Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Yechezkel Perek Lamed Tes, the 39th chapter of Yechezkel. This is the second and last Perek, which is going to be dealing with the war of Gog and Magog, the apocalyptic battle at the end of days. And really the two Perakim need to be read together. This includes two last sections about this war. We've talked about and we've learnt about how Gog is intending to come upon Israel when they're in security. It sounds like a post-messianic stage somewhat. We're now going to hear about how the fall of Gog or Magog and the decimation of their armies. Let's start at the beginning of this parak. So the first section of this parak, which talks about the ultimate fall and burial of the Gog and his armies, goes from Pasuk Aleph all the way to Tes Zion, and we're told the following. Hashem says that as Gog and his army from the land of Magog come into the land of Israel, but at that time v'shavav ticha v'sheishay sicha v'halisicha miyarkasei tzofon v'veisicha al-ari Yisrael, I'm going to bring you, Hashem's orchestrating their arrival in the land of Israel, but at that time al-hare Yisrael tipol, you're going to fall on the mountains, the hills of Yehuda, and you're going to be prey to all the vultures, to all the birds of heaven and beasts of the field that'll eat you. And there's descriptions about how their corpses will be strewn across the valleys, and Hashem's going to send this fire that's going to consume all of them, and everybody will know that Hashem is the king. And of course, the Mephoreshim, like the Arba Barnel, debate as to whether this means literally there's going to be a fire, or it means to say they're going to lose the battle in such a extreme and fast way, it'll be like fire consume them. And then Hashem says very explicitly in Pasuk Zayin, "V'shem kodshi odia, I'm going to make my holy name be known b'soich ami Yisrael, among Israel, v'loy achel es shem kodshi od. I will no longer desecrate or make empty my name, v'yadu hagoyim ki ani Hashem b'kodoshi kodosh Yisrael." Everybody will know that I'm holy. Notice there are two audiences. There's the internal audience of the Jews, and there's the external audience of the rest of the world, who will know that I am Hashem. At this point in time, there's a description of how all the people, the cities of Israel, will come out. They're going to take all these weapons and burn them. It's going to take 7 years to burn all of them. And at that point in time, we are going to bury the armies of Gog. We're going to find a valley, Gei Ha'ovrim Kidmas Hayam, which is to the east of the sea. It's a blockage valley which is offered passes by, and we're going to bury. It's going to take 7 months to bury all their dead, and we're going to bury them there. And finally, at the end of this whole description, Va'avru Ha'ovrim Ba'aretz, the people who pass by the land are going to come. And if you see, they're going to see a bone sticking out, they'll build next to it a mark, a demarcation, ad kivroi osoi mehamakarim, until they can be buried by the barriers, El Gay Hamon Gog, in the valley of Gog. A lot of things just to think about over here to appreciate. Obviously, this is a great Kiddush Hashem. The Kiddush Hashem is internal and external, equally as important, it seems, in this description. It is interesting, why will it take 7 years for this whole burning process? The Malbim points out, if you look carefully at the Psukim, this is a messianic description of the destruction of all arms in the world. That means to say all arms, all weapons, everything that humans and beings have taken, all the technology that they've marshaled to be able to use for destructive purposes will be burnt, but there'll be so much, there'll be so many weapons in the world that it'll take 7 full years to burn them all. This is like a messianic prophecy, like Yeshayahu Perek Beis, the verse which is inscribed in the UN buildings as you enter it in New York City, which is V'kitotzu charvoseihem le'itzin, that their swords will be beaten into plowshares. This is a time when there will no longer be need for weapons, which is going to happen after this terrible, terrible war. Where is this mass grave located exactly? So the Mitzvot David suggests that it seems to be a valley which is an impenetrable valley that passes by can't go through it, and that's why it's chosen as a burial spot. Whereas Rashi says, no, the mass graves will be such that it'll be impenetrable after the mass graves are put there. But where geographically is it? So the Da'at Mikra says, if you look very carefully, it sounds like it's to the east or the south of the sea, so it could be referring to either the Kinneret, so in the Galilee region, or in the Lebanon, in the Jordan region of the dead, towards the east, southeast of the Dead Sea, where this valley could be, that is referring to the burial place. Why are we burying them? So if you look in the Psukim says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects, or we are doing this because we are purifying Laman Taher Es Oretz. It's going to purify the land, that the corpses should not be strewn around, that people should be buried there in the form of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're in Tzelem Elokim, and they're going to be buried in the ground. And in fact, if you look at later on, when you see this in Zechariah, there'll be a great Kiddush Hashem created by the fact that that the Jews will be burying their enemies, even though the enemies are not there to bury them. And this is going to, it's going to be so, there are going to be so many corpses, it'll take a full 7 months to bury them. This gives a sense of the magnitude of this battle. The second last pasuk in the section, which is in pasuk Tezvah, which talks about seeing this etzem, this bone sticking out and burying it, is a little bit of an enigmatic pasuk. In fact, the Gemara in Moed Katan Daf Hey Amud Aleph says that this is one of the sources of remez, the tzion kvaros min haTorah, that the Bible demands that we demarcate burial grounds. We learn this from this pasuk in Yechezkel. And that that's why it is that we're so careful when we bury people, we make a mound, we make sure that there's demarcation, we put up a stone, a matzeva. That's all as a function of this tradition that we have, which is expressed here in Sefer Yechezkel. What is also interesting over here is the Radak says that the point of this pasuk is that when they will find other bodies protruding from the ground later on, they will mark them so they'll be able to take them for their full burial in the Gei Hamon Gog, in the Valley of Gog. And obviously this is for dignity to the land, and also, as Rashi points out, preserving purity for those who observe, who live in Eretz Yisrael, and observing the halachas of purity, of tumah and tahara, and are not going to pass over these areas which will make them impure. The next section of the Perek is Pasuk Yud Zayin to Chaf Dalet, and this section basically describes how all the birds of the heaven and the beasts of the field will be invited in. It's almost said that they are the audience of this prophecy to come and eat the flesh and drink the blood of the corpses. Clearly Israel's burying them, but it sounds like because it's going to take so long, there's going to be a lot of carnage which is going to be around. And interestingly enough, Hashem describes them as they're going to drink blood to a drunken state, mizivchi asher zavachti Elohim, from my sacrifice. It's almost as if these were the sacrifice of Hashem made in this valley. Very, very powerful and scary statement. And at this point, concluding this section, v'yadu hagoyim ki ba'avonom golu beis Yisrael. And they will now know that it wasn't because that they were powerful that they could exile the Jews. It was because the Jews had sinned, which allowed their exile to actually take place in the first place. And they'll understand that there was actually a theological undercurrent, not just simply a military or political one. That's what's going to be the point over here. And finally, the Perek closes the last little paragraph from Chof Hei to Chof Tes, re-clarifying the point of this war, which is that I'm going to bring back all the Jews to the land. I'm not going to hide my face anymore, because in the hidden face, the Hester upon him, is where, in that vacuum where evil can exist, I'm no longer going to give the space for that. And Hashem says, "B'shovavi osom min ha'amim, v'kibatzti osom me'aratzos oveihem," when I bring them all back, "v'nikdashti vom leinei ha'goyim rabim," I mean, they're going to be sanctify my name in the eyes of the many nations. This is important because there is a great debate as to when exactly this will take place in relation to Kibbutz Golios. It sounds like in this section that Kibbutz Golios will take place afterwards, but in the previous parak, it also sounds like everybody will be dwelling securely in the land of Israel. So it sounds like some people are already there, some people haven't come back yet, which seems to be the ambiguity of this. When actually did this take place? So it's interesting, if you go through history and the Meforashim, Jewish sources, and many non-Jewish sources as well, there are many arguments as to when this potentially could have been, if it has been. So, you know, if you look in Josephus as an example, he suggested that there's a particular group of barbarians who he identified as Gog and Magog, and they were locked up by Alexander the Great and in the Caspian Mountains, and they were able to escape. There's a whole legend which surrounds this this apocalypse in Josephus's works. On the more Jewish, on the we'll call traditional Jewish side way of looking at things, that Barbanel argues that this is referring to when Christian Europe will attack Jerusalem in another crusade, and the Muslims will fight back, and it'll be all centered over Yerushalayim, which we'll see is going to be more the focus of the Zachariah version of this when we get there. But it is important to know that Abarbanel was living at the time in 1492 after the expulsion of Spain, and he trying to facilitate the resolution, which ultimately did not succeed, of that problem when Isabella and Ferdinand took united Aragon and Castile and were able to fight off all the remaining Moors in the south and expel the Jews. They made Spain one country under the Roman Catholic Church. And at that point in time, there was talk about the year 1500 being apocalyptic year, when the Christians would reunite again for another crusade and take over Jerusalem and bring about the Messiah. So Abarbanel was looking at this and saying, this is potentially a moment where the War of Gog and Magog could appear, and it would be the Christians versus the Muslims at this point in time. There was a discussion among many Hasidic Rabbonim at the times of the French invasion of Russia, which they as Napoleon perhaps being the War of Gog and Magog, complicated because there were Jews on both sides of that battle, but nonetheless that was another time. Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher, after the Yom Kippur War, wrote a sefer where he tries to identify the Yom Kippur War as the War of Gog and Magog, but it's not so simple that it should be applied to this. There are many other people who suggest that maybe World War I, World War II might have been versions of the War of Gog and Magog. Nonetheless, they don't seem to have the credentials in the sense that they did not occur in the land of Israel. I'd like to close with a comment of the Malbim, which is to be found over here. And the Malbim says, I'm commenting on Pasuk Ches. If you just look at the Pasuk Ches for a moment, it has a very instrumental point over here. He says, Hinei bo'a v'niyasa. When it comes, it will be. Which means to say, says the Malbim, is we really don't know what it's going to look like until it actually is. It's going to be a moment that, although there were prophecies, but they're very vague, they're very mysterious, we're not going to see it until it actually happens. And as this said, described in Perek Chelik, in the last chapter of Sanhedrin, there are the Amoraim who said, Yesev Eloi Achlime, let the end come and me not be there, because it's so terrifying, there'll be so much pain, there'll be so many casualties. It's something we would wish to avoid, because there's clearly going to be a lot of suffering, not just to the non-Jews, it's going to be a lot of suffering, a lot of bloodshed, which we're seeing a little bit in this section. So God willing, Be'ezus Hashem, it should have been, but if it is coming, it should be in a way and a manner that should be one which preserves, God willing, the life of the Jews, and Emes Hashem heralds in the time of Gibbutz Golios and the Mashiach. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.